Hello and welcome to episode 54 of Spooky Girls, the podcast where we explore all sorts of real-life paranormal and creepy occurrences, from ghost sightings and hauntings to reported alien and cryptid encounters, myths, folklore, legends and more. Every episode we cover a different true spooky story. We're your hosts. I'm Katrina.
And I'm Jasmine.
And hello. We are joined by a very special guest, Lexi, aka October All Year _ on Instagram.
Yay!
A very, very, very talented photographer and longtime friend of the podcast.
But yes, I'm so excited. I'm so glad this worked out.
Well, it's so good to have you here with us today. It's been a very long time. So what better way to make a big return than with a very, very special friend? So thank you for being here.
Of course. Yay,
thank you. So yes, it's a very, very special episode because we are actually talking to Lexi about her experiences in this place, because she recently went
special,
and took
special place.
Amazing pictures on her journey. So we are going to be talking about the Lizzie Borden house.
I actually have a really, really fun story about Lizzie Borden. I'm sure that anyone that likes spooky stuff is probably fairly familiar with her to an extent. Mm-hmm. But did you know, Katrina, Lexi, did you know that there was a musical about Lizzie Borden?
Musical, no.
Called Borden, I believe it was called. Very, very brief name. But it was actually really good. And I saw it in London. I think I saw it in London about 3 or 4 years ago. Sorry, my microphone is having a bit of a flaccid moment. One second. It just keeps going like... I saw Lizzie Borden, the musical, in London about 3 or 4 years ago. And you've not really lived, I think, until you've experienced, you know, like a dancing axe. Just someone dressed up as an axe dancing across a stage.
Wow.
Very special. Really, really special stuff. Heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching. I'm sure you'll agree. I don't remember anything else except that scene.
I was just going to say, so you're an expert.
No. I mean, I'm an expert in like the fact that I saw that musical in the middle of nowhere in Greenwich years ago. Nice. But yeah, it's like, if you know what the musical Six is like, I kind of remember it being a bit like that. Like they wore like a lot of corsets and things that they probably did not wear, and like it was very like booby and sexy. It was like a cabaret, but like murder cabaret. But I don't know. It was interesting. It was very interesting, I'll give you that. But I'm keen to hear about actual Lizzie Borden, probably not quite the same as the musical. So
I think it'll be like as equally bizarre, but maybe not.
I mean maybe you can tell me whether or not she really did wear a corset and like skivvy about and with her boobies flapping out.
Probably
I'm not sure
not.
If that was a
I
thing
sort of think of her as more of like a spinster.
Well, yeah, everyone thought she was big gay. I know that in the movies they portray her as big gay.
Yeah.
Good for her, if so. But I know that that's probably more like speculation than anything.
Well, we'll see. There's like some little bits of it that are like, lesbian.
They were roommates.
Maybe.
They were roommates. Best friends. But anyway, yes, Lexi, why don't you kick us off then? Tell us about your journey. Where did you go and when and how was it?
So it was great. Back at the beginning of October, my husband and I decided we were going to take, because we try to every so often take a trip, just the two of us, like a long weekend away from the kids. And we decided to, because it was going to be spooky season, go up to New England. And we stopped in Sleepy Hollow first, and then the next day we did the Lizzie Borden house, which on the way there we stopped to, because we were passing through Connecticut, we stopped at the grave of Hannah Crana.
Good.
Which was really cool, yes. And then, so the Lizzie Borden house, and then the next day I did Salem, and then the that Sunday was Plymouth. Which I feel like doesn't get like talked about enough with like all of its spooky stuff that's been going that goes on there. So, like it's actually
so there's a Plymouth in America.
Yes.
Ah.
And I've been posting about it right now, a lot of hauntings there, because like Plymouth, like, you know, the Pilgrims and the first Thanksgiving, you know, Plymouth, it's November. Rock. So like, yes, Plymouth Rock. Yes. So
I think we should do an episode on it. I think that'd be really cool.
The only place, the reason I remembered Plymouth Rock specifically is from Anything Goes. That's one of the song lyrics. Another musical, of course.
It's all musical reference.
Yeah, I have a problem. Anyway, I'm really sorry.
There's every single talking point is related to a musical.
It's a secret, Katrina.
So I will kick us off with, I'll talk about my sources because I have written a bit up on, firstly, like what happened in the Lizzie Borden house, who Lizzie Borden was first of all. Mm-hmm. And then I'll talk about like the house, how it is today and all of the scary goings on and such. So my sources for this were Wikipedia, ghostwalks.com, the eu.heraldnews.com, Lizzie Borden warps and wefts.com. I don't know what that means. LizzieBorden.com, Britannica.com, CrimeMuseum.org, TheSmithsonianMag.com, NewEngland.com, BostonGhost.com, and ReallyHaunted.com. So there was a lot of information from a lot of random different places.
It's a lot of source.
So I'm sure most of you will know all about Lizzie Borden, just like Jasmine, if you've seen the musical. But just in case... But just in case you don't, or you need a little refresher, here's a quick overview. It's not very quick. So Lizzie Borden was born on the 19th of July, 1860, in Fall River, Massachusetts, the second daughter of wealthy local residents Sarah and Andrew Borden. Sorry, my dog's shouting.
Lily!
Lizzie's mother died when she was only 3 years old, and then her father, Andrew, ended up remarrying 3 years later. Lizzie and her older sister, Emma, who was 9 years her senior, lived together with their father and stepmother, Abby, in the Borden family home at 230 Second Street, Fall River, Massachusetts. And while they may have seemed like a typical family living an ordinary life, this all changed on the morning of Thursday, the 4th of August, 1892. Are you okay with your microphone, Jasmine?
Sorry, it's really just having a moment. What the... It's missing a screw. Look at that.
Oh.
Well, then I don't blame it for being flaccid.
I could just hold it, but I mean, I feel a little bit stupid. Sorry, Catty, please carry on.
Earlier that morning, Andrew Borden had left the house to conduct business in town, leaving behind his wife Abby, his daughter Lizzie, and the family's young Irish maid Bridget Sullivan, aka Maggie, in the home. It should be noted that the eldest daughter Emma was on vacation over 15 miles away at this time. Andrew returned home around 10:30 a.m. and settled on the couch in the downstairs sitting room to have a nap. About 45 minutes later, according to her testimony, Lizzie came into the house from the barn and discovered her father's mutilated dead body, slumped on the sofa, where he had been struck a number of times in the head with a hatchet-like weapon. Lizzie shouted for the maid, who was resting in her room on the third floor, saying, "Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Somebody came in and killed him." It was presumably when she was rushing downstairs to find Lizzie that she then came across Abby's equally brutalized body. Lizzie sent the maid for the family's physician, Dr. Bowen, who lived across the street, but as he wasn't home, Lizzie then sent her to go get a friend from down the road. Dr. Bowen did eventually arrive at the Borden home, where he pronounced both victims dead, but this probably would have been obvious to anyone who had seen the bodies. There might be quite a few bits in this where, like, because you've been there, you might know that it's not true or it's something different or whatever. So please correct me.
Oh, yes, you can myth bust everything.
Yeah.
The only thing so far about, like the day of the murders that I heard that, I was like, I don't think that's quite right, is that so like Bridget came, you know, running downstairs when Lizzie called her, that whole thing, but then they didn't find Abby until like a little bit later because they were like,
oh, okay,
where is Abby? And Lizzie was like, I think she said that she went out, but she may have heard her come back. Either way, Bridget and one of the family neighbors like went up the front stairs to like go see if they could see her, and then they could see like into the guest room and they could see her body.
Oh, okay.
So that was the only thing that I was like, I think that happened, if she didn't see her, because there's two different stairs in the house. There's the front stairs that go up just to the second floor where the guest room was and Lizzie and Emma's rooms were, and then there's the back stairs that go up to the second floor where Andrew and Abby's room's door is, and then you go up to the third floor and that's where Bridget's room was, and then like,
okay, because everything I read just said they later found Abby's body. And it's like, well, okay, how, like, what are the details then? And yeah, then something else said that, like, if you were on the second floor, like, you would have seen into the room and seen her body.
That's one of the things I think that's, like, really debated, because there's, like, people that, there's a part where Bridget says, you know, before Andrew was murdered, like, Lizzie was coming down the stairs, but Abby would have already been dead at that point. And they're like, oh, she should have been able to see into that room, yeah, and like see that she was dead, but I've seen people, surely, on Instagram, like, Bridget, be like, you can't see. And like, when I'm just coming down the stairs at my house, I'm not like, you know, like head on a swivel, like checking, looking at
him. Yeah. Have you seen all the pictures? Because I have.
Oh my goodness. I have.
They're gnarly.
They have them out, like, full on display at the house, like, during the house tour, you see them all like in the dining room, and they even have replica like skulls. I'm like, that's a lot for, because you have to imagine if it's haunted. I say if, but like, I'm sure that it is. So it's haunted. It's haunted by them, and they have to like, oh yeah, that like see that.
I would be so mad. I'd be like, my skull does not look like that. Shame on your family. How dare you?
Get this out of here.
Abby had been on the second floor of the home, tidying and making up the bed in one of the guest rooms, as the night before, Lizzie and Emma's maternal uncle, John Vinicum Morse, had unexpectedly come to stay in order to discuss business matters with Andrew. Forensic evidence suggests that Abby had been facing her killer at the time of the attack, and she was first struck on the side of her head with a hatchet or axe, causing her to turn and fall face down on the floor, where her killer then repeatedly bludgeoned her in the back of the head. Andrew, on the other hand, had most likely been murdered while he was asleep downstairs, as one of his eyes was cleanly split in two, suggesting that it had been closed when he was first struck with the murder weapon. Overall, Andrew was hit a total of 10 or 11 times, and Abby 18. When police arrived at the Borden home, they found that Andrew's wounds were still bleeding, indicating that he had only recently been attacked. However, when Abby's body was examined, it was established that she had actually died approximately an hour or so before her husband, suggesting that the murderer had just lingered in the home for all that time, with neither Lizzie nor Bridget encountering them. Many people found this almost impossible to believe, as well as the fact that the murderer would have had to have broken into the Borden home in broad daylight, which was located on a busy street only one block away from the city's business district, and yet no neighbours or passers-by reported seeing or hearing anything out of the ordinary. There was also no apparent motive for a random stranger to have committed the crime, with no evidence of robbery or sexual assault. The circumstances surrounding the murder of Abby and Andrew Borden were thus so strange and suspicious that the police believed that it was an inside job, and on the 11th of August 1892, 32-year-old Lizzie was arrested for the crime. After a long and arduous trial, Lizzie was eventually acquitted of all charges. This, however, didn't sit very well with many people, for a number of different reasons, and no person other than Lizzie was ever officially suspected or indicted for the murders.
So, well, one second, you know that rhyme that's really famous, Lizzie Borden took an axe, so there was no 50 whacks?
No.
No.
Well, that's just dramatic, isn't it?
Well, you're not going to make up a schoolyard, like, rhyme, and it's just...
Give your mother 8 axe
10 or 11.
It doesn't flow quite the 11, same, does it?
No. Cut your father's eyeball in half just a little bit with an axe. I think it has a good ring to it, personally. But...
So, one thing that had cast the spotlight of suspicion on Lizzie early on in the investigation was the fact that her story of events seemed to change repeatedly. And even in her initial police interview, her answers were strange and contradictory. In this interview, she allegedly reported hearing scraping and groaning noises coming from upstairs, but a mere 2 hours later, she told the police that she hadn't heard anything at all. Lizzie also seemed to be completely emotionless and calm during the whole ordeal, not shedding a single tear during her talks with the police. Something which multiple police officers noted as finding incredibly unnerving and suspicious. This suspicion only increased when the police interviewed Bridget, the Borden's maid, who claimed to have heard Lizzie laughing upstairs at around 10:30 a.m. that morning, just as Andrew had returned home, which is significant as, according to the post-mortem evidence, Abby would have already been dead by that point. Despite the police finding Lizzie's version of events dubious, they completely failed to investigate her properly and didn't even bother to check her clothing for bloodstains, something which they probably regretted when, a few days later, she was spotted tearing up and burning a dress on the kitchen stove, claiming that she had done so because it was covered in paint. While the police never officially found the murder weapon that had been used to kill Andrew and Abby, there was an axe discovered in the basement of the Borden house that drew a lot of suspicion. This axe had a break in the handle which looked to be recent, but it looked as though it had deliberately been covered in ash and dust to make it look discarded and untouched for some time. While it may have appeared to have been clean of any obvious evidence of the murders, such as blood and tissue, the police still failed to examine the axe for any fingerprints, which allegedly completely ruined the prosecution's chance during the trial. So, as you might be wondering, why would Lizzie murder her father and stepmother? Well, there are actually a number of reasons, not least of which was money. At the time of Andrew's death, his estate was valued at $300,000, the equivalent of over $10 million today. And with Abby also dead, this fortune would have gone straight to Emma and Lizzie. Despite being so incredibly wealthy, having invested in many prosperous mills, banks and real estate, Andrew was known for being very frugal and dour. For example, the family lived in a relatively modern house close to the business district, while the other wealthy residents of Fall River, including some of Andrew's cousins, generally lived in the more fashionable neighbourhood of The Hill, a lofty, shaded, luxurious enclave, a place where Lizzie had apparently always longed to live. In addition, Andrew was allegedly so stingy that he refused to have indoor plumbing installed in the home, something which was already a very common amenity within the homes of the wealthy. It's suspected that Andrew's stinginess caused tensions within the family, tensions which only started to increase in the months leading up to the murders, as Andrew had begun giving gifts of real estate to various members of Abby's family. This evidently angered both Emma and Lizzie and provoked a certain level of jealousy and concern in the sisters, and they ended up demanding that they too were given property although they were only given the home in which they were already living. There was also said to be a lot of resentment between the sisters and their stepmother Abby, who they allegedly believed had only married their father for his wealth. There was so much hostility, in fact, that Lizzie and Emma rarely ate meals with their parents, and Lizzie only ever referred to her stepmother as Mrs. Borden. A family argument only 1 month before the murders prompted both sisters to take an extended vacation in the neighbouring town of New Bedford, and, despite returning a week before the murders, Lizzie chose to stay in a local boarding house for a few days before returning to the Borden family home. Despite Lizzie's eventual acquittal, her life was changed forever following the trial, and she was never truly able to escape the infamy that came with being a suspect in the murder of her father and stepmother. She was shunned by many people within the local community, and supposedly became somewhat of a curiosity around Fall River, being incessantly followed around by neighbourhood kids who liked to pester and play pranks on her whenever she left her home. 2 months after the trial, Lizzie and Emma moved from the Borden family home to a large Victorian house on the hill, where Lizzie had always longed to live, and they resided there together for the next few years. However, they eventually grew apart or had some sort of falling out, as in 1905, Emma moved away and there was no evidence to suggest that the sisters even ever saw one another again. Lizzie spent the rest of her days in Fall River, until she passed away in 1927, aged 66, from pneumonia. Strangely enough, she and Emma died only 9 days apart, and were both buried in the Borden family plot in the nearby Oak Grove Cemetery, alongside their mother, father, and stepmother. The gruesome murders of Andrew and Abby Borden, and in particular, the role that their strange spinster daughter may or may not have played in them, captured the imagination of the nation at the time that they occurred, and continue to do so up until the present day. This case has inspired a wide range of media, including books, films, and TV shows, and musicals, as well as the very popular, if somewhat slightly inaccurate, schoolyard rhyme, "Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
Very nice. Beautiful.
So as I like touched upon there, as we were talking about with the lesbian thing, people sort of think that maybe...
that she was hooking up with the what's her name? With the housekeeper.
Bridget.
Yeah, they thought she was hooking up with Bridget and like that's what they were doing while everyone was being murdered. But also that like maybe that's why she fell out with Emma, because she was apparently very close with an actress that she made friends with. And they think that it must have been, like, something really big for them to, like, never see each other again.
Yeah. So, do you guys think she did it? What do you think, Lexi? I mean, you went really to the weird house. What
yeah,
do
go
you
on,
think?
Lexi.
No, I do. Just, to me, it's kind of, like, the simplest explanation. Like, just what makes sense. Because, like, it was either... you know, she did, and I mean, there's also people that think that her uncle is the one that did it, and I do need to read more about that. That's kind of why I made the face like, I don't know, because I haven't really looked too far into, like, the theories about her uncle having done it.
Yeah, because he, like, randomly came to stay, and then he left that morning, and he was supposed to be coming back, but I've not been able to, like, find anything on whether he did or not. And then, also, it was like, he was supposedly there to talk about business with Andrew, so yeah, they think that he might have, like, they might have had a disagreement or something.
I mean, right, the thing about her with the dress, I'm sorry, she got paint on it, girl, please. I mean, I feel like, because I remember reading that it was that the reason why they all voted like oh no, it couldn't possibly have been her, is because they couldn't imagine a woman doing something like that,
right?
But I mean, like, I'm tearing up a dress and burning it.
Yeah, like, that would be, usable rags. Like, in those days, even our grandmother had a bag of rags.
I mean, yeah, I have a rag. You see that? That's a rag. That's an old t-shirt right there. Yeah. But I'm not a rich person in the middle of Massachusetts, you know?
Yeah, but it sounded like they didn't have, like, although Andrew was really wealthy, it sounds like they were very modest living.
But I don't know. My thing is, like, her uncle, like I said, maybe it was him. And again, I need to read more about that. But looking at it, it's either her or like somebody that broke into their house in the middle of the day and nobody saw and nobody heard. And they hid for like an hour in between like Abby and Andrew's murders. I'm like, that just doesn't. And then they left. And again, nobody saw, took the murder weapon with them because it was never found. And like nobody saw somebody just like toting like a bloody hatchet. Like,
yeah, because then they broke in, went upstairs, killed Abby,
hid.
And then because it's like Bridget let Andrew back in the house because apparently the door was like locked.
Right, the door was locked.
Like, it's just really dodgy.
Wouldn't it be really funny if one of them killed the one upstairs and then someone else killed the one downstairs and they're like, oh my God, same?
Mom, and then she was like, oh, wait.
Like, there's a murder afoot.
Like, wait, who did that? That wasn't me. Like,
that one wasn't me, no.
So today, the Borden House is a bed and breakfast and museum and has been operated as such since 1996, but since 2021, it has been owned by US Ghost Adventures. Not Ghost Adventures, the Ghost Adventures, but a company that provide historic ghost tours and experiences at various different locations throughout the US. The house has been restored to look as historically accurate as possible to the period in which the Bordens lived there, with the decor and furnishings having been painstakingly duplicated, and the original hardware and doors remaining intact, effectively transporting visitors back in time to the ill-fated morning when the grisly murders occurred. Indeed, in the sitting room, there is a settee that is near identical to, and in the exact same location, as the one on which Andrew was laying when he was bludgeoned to death, and guests are encouraged to pose and take pictures on it, complete with props, to recreate the infamous crime scene photo of Andrew's dead body splayed across the couch.
It's a little bit fucked up.
Yeah.
A bit.
That was one of the things I was like...
Did you actually see people doing that?
I didn't see people doing it. People might have, like, that were staying there, because when we stayed there, it was kind of weird. I didn't see, like, the house was full, like, all the rooms were rented, but I didn't see anybody else there, really, that was staying there that night. So they very well could have done it, like, when I wasn't in there, but I didn't see.
They're like, let's hide this awful behavior from the other guests.
The tour, and this is where, I don't know, I have a story, if you want me to, like...
Go on. Yeah.
So, like, related to this, I think. So they have... this like cutout of Andrew's head that, you know, like, have you seen like at like sporting events, they have like the big, you know, like blow ups of like different, like it's that, like just like a giant blow up of his head that like people can like pose with, and they have like a rubber hatchet. Like, it's very like,
that's awful.
Yeah, exactly. We were talking about like the crime scene pictures and everything, and like they have to see that every day. So like also people are like laying on the couch like pretending to be him, and like presumably the house is haunted by him. I don't know, it's just very like So we're during, this was like the like first thing that happened from, you know, time I was in the house till we left. So before we checked in, we did like the house tour that they have every day. They have a few every day, I think, but we did like the last one, that way we could just check in right after. And I'm sure you know, like me, I take tons of pictures everywhere I go. So I'm like taking pictures during the tour, and I went to go take a picture of the couch when, you know, this thing was on there, but I was just taking pictures around the room regardless. And my camera started acting really weird on my phone. And I've had this happen before at like other like haunted locations. It happened at the Titanic exhibit out in Las Vegas too, where like I was trying to take a picture of something and like the camera app was open on my phone, but the screen was just black. Like, there was nothing there. And when it happened at the Titanic thing, I was like, oh, somebody doesn't want me to take a picture, like, of their stuff. Like, that's, like, theirs. They don't want a picture taken of their stuff. So I'm, like, trying to take pictures around this room, and my phone would either be, like, black when I had the camera open, or, like, you know how you point your phone at something to take a picture of it, and then, like, but, like, you're moving the lens around and you can see where it's obviously pointed, right? Mine would, like, freeze on, like, the floor, because, like, I'd open it pointing down, it'd be, like, frozen on the floor, and I'd be, like, lifting my phone up to, like, point it around, but the image on my phone was still of the floor. I hadn't taken a picture of it, but, like, that the screen was just, like, frozen and, like, wouldn't. I was like, this is really weird. And then later in that room, when I was in there by myself, I took those things off the couch and just kind of, like, put them away, because I was like, I don't like these. I'm sure you don't like these, so I'm just gonna put them. I had no trouble taking pictures in that room at all. So I was like, I clearly he's not happy with these things being in here, because, like, you're trying to take pictures of it and your camera's malfunctioning, and then all of a sudden later you're in the same room and you move the things, and then it's like, okay, you can take these pictures now.
Honestly, fair play to him, because I would be fucking pissed. Imagine,
Right?
like, you spend
So you have
hundreds
to
of
relive your horrific murder every single day. Sometimes multiple times a day, because there's, like, multiple tourists. Like,
That
yeah,
poor
so
guy.
that kind of, like, grossed me out. But,
Awful.
and it was a very weird thing. So that was, like, what kicked off the, like, weird things that happened in that house.
Ooh,
Yeah.
that's so creepy. And just as like you mentioned before, this is like the next part of it, is that like the very crime scene photo, like the infamous one that
It's
has
on
his
the
dead body
mantle
in.
in that room. Like,
Yeah,
that's so
as well as a
messed up.
picture of like the hatchet that was allegedly the murder weapon. They are on display on an end table with a magnifying glass placed next to them, just in case you want to get a closer look at Andrew's bloody, horrifically mutilated head. There are other gruesome artifacts and reminders of the murders exhibited throughout the house, including replicas of Andrew and Abby's damaged skulls, the real ones of which were used as evidence during the trial, in a glass cabinet, and a 19th century autopsy table hanging on the dining room wall, alluding to the fact that their autopsies took place in that room.
Ooh, well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's so
I'd be
disrespectful,
pissed.
I
Yeah, it's
think.
one of those things, like, obviously the things that we're interested in, and, like, true crimes and hauntings and stuff, it's kind of like towing a fine line, right? Like, with, like, what is, the research and the interesting part and, like, cool stuff to see, but then, like, there's definitely, like, a line,
Well, the line is what they sell in the gift shop, which I'm going to
Posing.
talk about, which I can't wait to talk about.
But, like, or, like, I think about it all the time when I'm, like, taking pictures. Like, I do it, I take tons of pictures in the cemetery, I'm sure you've seen, and I've started, like, researching the people that, like, I take pictures of, partially because, like, their grave is, especially in, I live in Savannah, for anybody that doesn't know, one of the most haunted cities in the US. So, like, our cemeteries are kind of treated a little bit like a tourist stop, which is, it's historical and it's really cool, but, like, you see people, like, just taking pictures with graves and, like, on them, and it's like, that's where it's, like, not okay.
You do it with such love and respect,
Yeah, thank you.
though.
I really tried to, because I'm like, that was somebody at some point, so
Like, you always talk so kindly about like who that person may have been and their graves and stuff, yeah.
thanks.
So, if you want to stay at the B&B, then room prices start at $250 per night for two people. And for an additional $20 per person, you can enjoy a breakfast that includes a mix of what the Bordens had on the morning of the murders, with the exclusion of the mutton and Johnny cakes that they ate, because apparently too many guests found them unappetizing.
What's a Johnny cake?
It's like a pancake type
Yeah,
thing.
kind of like a pancake.
Because in the UK, a Johnny is a condom. So, like, I don't,
It's not
you wouldn't want to eat
unrelated.
that. Okay, you wouldn't want to eat that for breakfast.
Unrelated. They are unappetizing.
They sound it, definitely. Let me tell you that much.
I kind of would have liked to try the mutton, though. I think mutton, like, wouldn't be too bad.
For breakfast?
For breakfast, yeah. I've had weirder things for breakfast.
It's a bit chewy. I don't know about that.
So there are a total of 6 different options to choose from when deciding where to sleep in the Borden house, with 3 individual rooms, one of which belonged to the Borden's maid, Bridget Sullivan, and 3 suites consisting of the Andrew and Abby suite, which is their bedroom, as well as Abby's sewing room, which has now been turned into another bedroom, the Lizzie and Emma suite, made up of their 2 bedrooms, and the John V. Moore suite, the room in which Abby was murdered, named after Lizzie and Emma's uncle who had slept there the night before. So which one did you say you stayed in, Lexi?
We stayed in the Bridget Sullivan room.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
On the 3rd floor. How was it?
I was joking with my husband that it was like the best sleep that I got that month, like of October, because when we came back, I had like a 2-day long migraine, and then our kids just kept like taking turns getting sick, and then I got sick, and it was just like miserable around our house for like a few weeks. I was like, I think the best night of sleep that I got on that trip was at the Lizzie Borden house, because
you have to share a bathroom though, don't you?
Yes. So on the 3rd floor, because I think, like you were saying, on the 2nd floor they're all like suites, so they all have like their own bathroom, but on the 3rd floor there's the Bridget Sullivan room, and then like the rest used to be an attic, I believe. They added 2 more rooms upstairs, so there's 3 bedrooms upstairs total, and there's like a little sitting area up there too. And then there's a bathroom that those 3 rooms share. So you do share a bathroom, which that's my like last story right before we left, but that's like my last story, is like a spooky experience with the bathroom.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare. Sharing a bathroom's like my nightmare anyway, but never mind then having a scary experience in a bathroom.
Sleep itself actually wasn't that bad, because I was like, I'm not gonna sleep, and my husband was like, you probably won't, because like he knows me so well, but like we were both so tired from traveling, and like nothing, at least not that I knew, happened while we were sleeping. Like when I woke up the next morning, I heard like footsteps in the hall, and I was like, what's that? And then I was like, oh, it's that other couple like using the bathroom. Like it's not anything. So like very respectful on the sleep, I guess, were the ghosts on the 3rd floor.
Oh,
they were
like, good.
Oh, they're sleeping, they're tired, just leave them alone. The sleep itself is actually not bad. I went in anticipating just being up all night.
It's because they knew that you were one of the good ones. That's why. They're like, ah, you know.
Yeah, because like when I get further into the ghosts, there are a few of them that like to torment people while they're sleeping or staying in the rooms. So.
And I definitely couldn't have stayed in the Morse room, like the guest room where Abby had died. That I was like, somebody like actually died in there. And then also, so this is like my second story from the visit to the house. So this was during the house tour too, because I wanted to make sure we did the house tour so we could see all the rooms, because otherwise we would only be able to see our room and then like the common areas of the house. And so, you know, you always hear on like paranormal shows where people are like, oh, I felt so sick, or oh, I felt like dizzy in there. And I'm always like, that's just so subjective. And I'm not saying they're like not being truthful, because I'm sure that people do feel weird. People definitely feel weird things, but it's just one of those things that's like, how do you know? You know, kind of thing, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Zach Bagans and his asthma attacks are not real.
Right?
And his massive gas mask that he has to wear everywhere is not
everywhere.
Real.
So it's just one of those things that I'm like very grain of salt with, I guess, is the best way to like put it. But like I walked into that room and I felt like I was going to throw up. Like immediately I was like so sick, and I was like, the air, like it just, everything felt so heavy, and just like there's definitely an imprint of what happened in that room, because as soon as we left I felt fine. It was totally fine, and I was like,
so creepy.
I don't know how the couple that rented this room is going to have been here, because like I would just be like so like, I can't breathe, I feel sick. Like it just felt, just like I said, heavy. Like I don't know.
I think even just like the thought of like, you look down and be like, someone literally died there.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then I've seen people taking, you know, like with that Andrew Borden recreating his crime scene picture. I've seen them recreating Abby's picture of just lying on the floor in the exact same spot. And it's just like, why?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Okay, so this is the really fun bit. Before we start talking about the spirits who are said to inhabit the Borden house, I first just wanted to discuss some of the items that they sell in the gift shop, because it's absolutely wild. Okay, so first we have, quote, this is the description, a 2-inch glass cork-sealed vial full of authentic hand-scooped brick dust from the Borden basement, which they sell as either a necklace or earrings, I think.
I was going to say, can you snort it?
Is it like, but like, what's the point that it's haunted dust? And surely it's a finite resource.
I mean, you could, I don't know, you could probably do some pretty gnarly voodoo shit with that.
But brick dust, like, you know? I do.
Tasty. Snort it. Cocaine. Poor man's cocaine.
So then we have a magnet of Andrew and Abby's gravestone, which is a bit morbid, but like, okay.
That's kind of cool.
That one, yeah, because there was that one I saw and I was like, okay. But then they also have like the crime scene photos as like, yeah, a magnet.
Then the next thing that caught my eye was a keychain that had the phrase, don't make me axe you again, on it.
Why?
Which is quite funny. But then there was the Lizzie Murder mystery board game.
That sounds cool.
I'd love to play, but surely, like, you already know who the murderer is.
like Clue, but...
yeah.
It was Lizzie in the guest bedroom with an axe every single time.
Then there is a Lizzie Borden teddy bear, which is holding a bloody axe. A plastic toy bloody axe for the children to enjoy. A bloody Lizzie bobblehead. And finally, and perhaps the most distasteful, we have a $60 personalised official Lizzie hatchet. Like an actual functional throwing axe.
It's not a weapon.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to have those publicly? Like, is it legal to own one of those?
Well, it is America. I don't...
No, but, like, in a lot of parts of America, you still can't own a fucking... Like, you can't walk around with a machete, can you?
I guess it would depend on where you're at.
Oh, my God.
But, Lexi, yeah, is like, not sure.
A hatchet would be just, like, an axe that you would have at your house for, like, chopping wood and stuff. So, like, as long as you're not, like, you know...
You can have it cheaper... as just a normal axe, or you can pay more to have it engraved.
In the UK, you have to be 18 years old to buy a knife. And you have to be 16. You have to be 16 to buy a felt tip pen in case you do a graffiti on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Very naughty.
I had to. I wasn't allowed to buy super glue the other day because I didn't have any form of ID on me.
I love America. It's like, it's just wild. It is. The whole of it is just beautiful. I've only been to Florida. Fucking loved it. It was a great time.
So, as you might imagine, there are a number of spirits who are said to inhabit the old Borden house. And if you fancy wandering through the property at night, searching in the dark for evidence of the paranormal and trying to make contact with the dead, you can do so for a mere $40 per person on one of the house's nightly ghost hunts, where they'll supply you with all the equipment you need to conduct your own investigation, and you get a discount on the hatchet so that it's only $25.
What?
Some of the strange activity that people have allegedly experienced in the home includes noises such as footsteps and creaking floorboards in empty rooms, disembodied children's laughter, doors opening and closing by themselves, strange shadows in the hallways, power surges and newly replaced light bulbs burning out, and sightings of a ghostly face that appears on a wall down in the basement. As you might have expected, both victims who were murdered in the house, Abby and Andrew Borden, are said to haunt the premises, as does Lizzie herself, although this seems to only be on a part-time basis, as she also apparently frequents her post-murder trial home, Maplecroft, located on nearby French Street. Aside from them, it is claimed that the house is also inhabited by a number of other spirits, including the Borden's maid, Bridget Sullivan, two children who were relatives of the Bordens and were also murdered nearby, and a ghost cat that is said to haunt the third floor and rubs its head against visitors' legs to make itself known.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. Was there any ghost cat, Lexi?
No, I didn't have the ghost, but we talked to the other couple on the third floor like the next morning, and they said, the woman said that she felt like, because they had cats, and she was like, had the feeling of like her cat jumping up and like laying in bed with her, and she was like, wait, I'm not, you know, you like wake up and you like don't know where you are. She was just kind of like, oh, okay. And then she's like, wait, I'm not at home. Like, there should be no cat.
That's cute.
That itself can be quite scary though, because actually I was recently at a friend's and I was staying in what was her bedroom, and they have a cat. And I didn't know that the cat had hidden under the bed earlier in the night. So when I closed the door and switched all the lights off and got into bed, I then felt it get on top of the bed and it came on my chest, but it was quite a chunky little thing. And so I was like, okay, I actually can't breathe. And then
I
had to get out. But it was really cute.
Cats. That's very cute. Good cat.
Good cat.
Clever. But I am confused. Why would a ghost haunt a house if they didn't die there?
I don't know. But I sort of slightly get into it, maybe a little bit.
I've never heard of that happening before.
Yeah, the only other place I've heard that before is like the Villisca house in Iowa. Like, some people think that like the killer in that instance like haunts that house, but like same thing, like they didn't die there, so like why would they like the connection, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so starting with Abby and Andrew, so people think that their spirits are in a state of perpetual unrest due to their horrifically violent deaths, as well as the fact that their murderer was never brought to justice. When the Lizzie Borden house was featured on the popular paranormal reality TV series Ghost Adventures in 2012, they interviewed a tour guide who claimed to have encountered the spirit of Andrew Borden, who became violent for no apparent reason and punched her in the back. I don't know why that's funny.
It's just, you never hear about being punched in the back. I'm very glad to hear he didn't punch you in like the neck or whatever. It's a weird place to get punched, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know why they thought it was Andrew. Whatever, right. Whatever.
Like, oh, it was him. He's violent.
Supposedly, if you want to placate his spirit while you're visiting the property, particularly if you're staying in his and Abby's old room, you should leave money on the dresser for the ever miserly spirit. So basically, if you give him money, he'll leave you alone.
Yeah, that's what they said when we did the house tour. They were like, the second floor, like, we tell people to leave money on the dresser. Like, not even just that room, but, like, the whole floor. Like, in general, like, people leave change. And then, like, they have, like, a quote-unquote easier night. And then, like, the third floor, not the room we stayed in, Bridget's room, but one of the other rooms is called, like, the children's room. And there's like a lot of like toys and books in there. So they're like, oh, if you read a story to the kids or like play with them, you'll have like an easier night. So I don't know.
That's cool.
Do you think it's all just a ploy to get like change off people?
I was going to say.
Get money.
It's for Andrew.
So other than that, Andrew doesn't really seem to make too many appearances around the house, but Abby, on the other hand, makes her presence known far more often. Visitors to the property frequently report seeing an older woman in period clothing wandering around the house. Many guests assume she's either an actor, a maid, or the host of the B&B, but they are quickly proven wrong, as she then appears to completely vanish into thin air. There is also an unexplained floral scent that frequently drifts throughout the home, which many have attributed to her presence. Abby is most often sighted in the second floor hallway and in the rooms that are situated on that floor. She appears to still be going about her housekeeping chores, just as she had been on the morning that she was killed. And visitors sleeping in the John V. Moore suite in particular describe feeling the bedsheets tighten around them in the middle of the night, as though someone is trying to smooth down the sheets and make the bed. So it's not too creepy for a room that someone was literally bludgeoned to death in.
Right, it could be way worse.
Yeah, it could be way worse. And it is if you stay in Lizzie's room, apparently. So as for Lizzie herself, she is of course said to still haunt the property. One of the most frequently occurring phenomena that visitors have experienced while in the home is a strange, opaque, black, shadowy figure, which seems to stretch all the way up the main staircase, slowly moving up each step before disappearing when it reaches the top. This entity is considered by many to be Lizzie, leisurely climbing the stairs on her way to dispose of her hated stepmother once more.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's possible, though, that Lizzie's murderous spirit might feel some remorse for her actions, as guests staying in the room next to her bedroom have reported being awoken in the middle of the night by a woman crying loudly on the other side of the wall. Lizzie can't feel that guilty, however, as a number of visitors staying in her bedroom, in what was allegedly her actual bed, but I'm not so sure about how factually correct that is, have claimed to have been woken up by an unseen force touching them in their sleep, and even what feels like hands wrapped around their necks choking them while they lay there. Many photographs taken in that room have also captured strange anomalies and orbs floating next to the bed. So we don't really have time to go into the other ghosts, but yeah, it's thought that Bridget's there because it was like so much trauma and she was the one that found Abby. So maybe there's like residual energy, and in EVPs, people have heard someone shouting. Maybe it's Bridget shouting for Lizzie to say that, oh, Abby's been killed as well. And then there are also ghost children who were killed nearby, who were drowned by their mother. And people think that they're in the house for some reason. So as Lexi said, they like leave gifts for them.
It was next door and they were like wardens as well. So yeah. Like the connection there.
It's pretty bad luck in that family, huh?
Yeah. Well, they even brought up in trial to say, like, is it an inherited thing that people are crazy in the Borden family? But then they soon realised that no, because actually, like, the woman who killed her kids wasn't blood related to them. She married into the family.
Right, married in.
But yeah. So anyway, yes, please, Lexi, tell us about your scarier.
So I have two more ghost stories. So the first one was the night we checked in. And like background, like I am the one that like believes in all of this stuff and is like really into it. And my husband is supportive. does not buy into it at all.
Supportive,
doesn't believe
skeptic.
In hauntings or ghosts, but he's like, good for you. Like, go for it.
Let's go on a trip.
So we get there, we're checked in, we're upstairs. And this is why I thought it was him. So he had like bumped into this end table that like had a doll on it. And all I saw at the corner of my eye was this doll just go like fall over. So I like hit the roof. Like I jumped. He was like, that was me. It's going to be a long night for you. Like I was like, whatever. I was like, I'm going to go downstairs. And he just wanted to finish like, you know, putting stuff in the room, you know, freshen up, that kind of thing. So I go downstairs to the main floor in the room where Andrew died. And I was taking pictures and just kind of like going about my business. And I hear somebody, and I mean, it's an old house, right? You hear everything. So I hear somebody, you know, coming down the stairs, like the back staircase. And I hear them walking into the kitchen. And I yelled my husband's name. I was like, hey. And then like the footsteps stopped. And I like thought, my first thought was that he was waiting to scare me. And I was like, you're a dick. So like it just stopped and there was silence. And so then I yelled, I was like, Jay, that's not funny. Like, you're not funny. And like still nothing. So I was like, and like, keep in mind at this point, no footsteps going out of the room, no footsteps going towards the basement door. Side door, back up the stairs, nothing, like just still. So I like go into the kitchen to like yell at him and tell him I don't think that he's funny, and like nothing. There was nobody there. And so I like flew back up the stairs to the third floor. He was in the bathroom. Okay. So like that one was one that I did. And then later I was sitting, we were sitting in the room. And it was like, would have been like a very funny picture because I'm sitting there with my little recorder trying to get EVPs, which I still need to listen to all of them. And he's just sitting there like reading like a book, like just like this is not real. I heard the footsteps in the kitchen again and I went into the kitchen and nobody was there. So that was that. So I think that there was definitely something like lurking around in the kitchen. Who or what? I don't know. But that
Very
happened.
creepy.
And then so nothing happened overnight. And then the next morning, you know, we're getting up. I can hear the other couple in and out of the bathroom getting ready. And so my husband was like, I'm gonna go brush my teeth. And like, I was trying to, my thought was to like be considerate to, you know, the other couple. Like, we'll just both go in and brush our teeth, you know, same time, get ready. That way we can get in and out faster instead of like all four of us having to rotate through using this one bathroom. And so I'm like, okay. And I'm like following him into the bathroom and I like put my stuff down on the counter. And he was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just gonna brush my teeth too. And he like, I still think this is weird. I don't know, maybe I'm weird, but he was like, Lexi, I have to pee. And I'm like, okay, we've been married like almost 6 years and like we have two kids. Like, I don't like,
Please.
why are you looking at me like, yeah, well, exactly. And that's kind of what I said. I was like, do you think I've not seen it? Like, I don't, only it was
You
far
have
less
two
ladylike than
children.
that.
It's
I was
all under
like,
a sheet.
just, okay, like, whatever. And, but I said what I said again, not quite as ladylike. And I was like, kind of like laughed at myself, like, huh, that's probably not appropriate for like, you know, the 1800s at all. And my stuff like slid across the bathroom counter. I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
Like,
I'm so sorry.
how dare you mention a penis in this nice house? How dare you? That is
So sorry.
hilarious.
So that was my other story. And it's just like funny that it was like in the bathroom. But yeah, my stuff, like my toothbrush just like kind of like slid and like kind of like rolled a little bit on the counter. I was like,
That is
oh,
so funny. Oh my
okay.
gosh. I
No, that wasn't
apologize.
appropriate, was it?
God.
Sorry.
That is amazing. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lexi. That is
Oh, thank you for
absolutely
having me. This was
Yay.
fun.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
you.
We could have spoken for hours, but
I know.
we don't
No,
have enough
you're
time.
good. So that was fun.
Yay. Yes. Thank you so much, Lexi. We so hope to have you back soon as well, where you
Definitely.
can talk about all your different adventures.
Yes, guys, if you haven't already, then what are you doing? But you can follow Lexi on Instagram at October All Year. Is there an
Underscore.
underscore? Underscore? There you go. Yep. Yeah, it's a great account if you love all things spooky, all things to do with the paranormal. She takes some really, really beautiful
Oh, she's so
pictures of
talented.
graveyards, and
Thank you.
again, it's all very, very tastefully done and respectful.
Yes.
Because we respect the dead in this house of spooky girls. So yeah,
We
thank you
do.
so much again, Lexi, for joining us.
Oh,
You're
of
amazing.
course.
Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back for the next episode. If you want to get in touch for any reason, just to say hello or to send us a story of your own true paranormal or spooky experience, please email us at spookygirlspodcast@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Twitter at spookygirlspod and on Instagram at spookygirlspodcast. If you want to support us further, then you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/spookygirls, and from as little as $2 a month, you gain access to bonus episodes and other awesome content that we have planned for the future. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you all next time. Stay spooky. Bye
Goodbye.
bye. Bye
Awesome.
bye,
Great.
Lexi.
Thank you so much, guys. We do have to end it there.
Yay.